there's a lot of details that go in the making of a Jewish marriage. There is many halachas, many laws, there is many customs, many traditions, and there is also various different ways in which people and the details of how things are done. So, not here to specifically talk about every and all kinds of customs and all the deals, but just to give a general overview and an outline in very general terms, and also specifically in the Chabad tradition, how the wedding is done, and the engagement process. There is many books have been written on this topic, and there's a lot of information out there. This is just a brief synopsis on the practical and on the actual doing the different ceremonies that are involved with the marriage celebration and the beginning from the engagement. Generally speaking, there are three steps to a marriage, two of them being from the Torah, and one from the Rabbanon. The first one of the Rabbanon is called Shiduchim. Shiduchim, that is the engagement, the basic agreement of the Chosen and Kala to get married, that they decide that they are for each other and they want to build a Jewish home together. That is called the Shidduch. The Chachamim require that a person, before giving Kiddushin, before marrying, should first have an arrangement, an agreement to get married. That is called the Shidduchin. Together with that Shidduch, with that engagement, you also have a certain party or a ceremony which people get together. Sometimes it's referred to as a Vart, meaning a word in Yiddish, which is a word of commitment to get married, the word of the Chosen Kala to get married. Sometimes it's called a L'chaim, where people come and give a toast, a L'chaim, to the Chosen Kala and their families. But this is a ceremony which is associated with this first part of Shidduchin that the Rabbanon require, that before one marries, there needs to be a Shidduch, an agreement, together to consent that we're going to get married, and that is the part of Shidduchin. And that we're going to first concentrate in this class on the procedures and the items that are involved with Shidduchim. The other two, then there is the Kiddushin, that's the betrothal in which the Chosen is Mekadesh, betroths the Kala. And then we have Nisuyin, which is the marriage, the actual marriage of the Chosen and Kala, the Chuppah and the other details, as will be explained later on. Now, basically, the Shidduch is the agreement to get married, and the agreement can be in one or two or both ways. Which means that in earlier times it was done in one way, and now it's done a little bit different, which means in the olden days the agreement that took place between the Chosen and the Kala was known as Tenoyim, and they would write a Shtar Tenoyim. A Shtar Tenoyim is a document of the Tenoyim, meaning the conditions. because within that document they would have the various different conditions and deals that are made between the Chosn Kala, but mainly between the parents of the Chosn Kala, different obligations of both sides and what they would be, and that would be all put in the Shtar Tinoim. And then that would be for the time, also the agreement when to get married and where to get married and all the details, whatever the agreements were made, that is the Shtar, that would be the document of Tinoim. So logically it actually makes sense that when there is an agreement to get married and you want to put in the different details and the different conditions, that you should do it at the time that you agree to get married, and they will then later on serve as the commitment that everybody will have to come up, fulfill whatever the Shtar Tinoim says. But in later generations, as we do it now, we don't write, and in Chabad today, we don't write the Shtar Tinoim earlier than the day of the wedding. We actually do the Shtar Tinoim on the wedding day. It almost seems trivial at this point, because the conditions are what's going to take place until they get married, the different obligations, and when we're standing at the wedding day, the conditions presumably have been fulfilled, otherwise they would not be standing to get ready to get married. When they come together at the day of the marriage, and you're going to get married there, so what point is there into rehashing what should have needed to take place to sign a document, which really is almost comes out that it's meaningless, because these conditions have been fulfilled, because otherwise they would not be standing there. But nevertheless, the tradition and the custom is to do the Shtar Tinoim and do it at the day and prior to the marriage, and not to do it at the earlier time of the L'chaim or the Vort, or at some earlier time beforehand. And some of the reasons that are also is because a shidduch is a major, major commitment. And, you know, we worry that if something did go wrong during the time and somebody breaks the shidduch, that could be something which is not... there's still a commitment, but not to the extent of a Shtar Tinoim. Whatever the reason is, there's perhaps other reasons, but the bottom line is we don't do the Shtar Tinoim at the L'chaim or the Vort. But yet we do make a kinyan, we make a verbal agreement, and we make a kinyan that is a special way of a commitment through a special procedure, which makes the kinyan, and that is actually the commitment to the general concept over here, that the chosn and the kala commit each other to each other, to marry each other. None of the other conditions are expressed over there, but just the general commitment, and we accept the kinyan for that. That is done at the time of the L'chaim, or at the time of the Vort. So now, in the order, the way it's done, we will first discuss the Kinyan, which is usually done at the L'chaim and the Vort, and then we will discuss the Shtar Tinoim, the document of the conditions, which is a more comprehensive details that should have taken place till the time of the marriage, which is written, filled out, and signed at the day of the wedding, in the most time at the place of the wedding, sometimes in the wedding hall before the actual chasana, sometimes the wedding, sometimes in the rabbi's office beforehand during the daytime. But it's done on that same day that the marriage takes place. So well, first let's discuss the L'chaim Vort and the Kinyan, and then we'll discuss the Shtar Tinoim. So as mentioned, that once a shidduch has been decided upon, so it's customary to make the celebration, which we call a vort or a l'chaim, and the family and the friends are invited, and the assembled, they wish mazel tov to the chasen kala, to the mechotonim, and make it into a celebration. So, some do make at that point the kinyan sudar. A kinyan sudar basically is also known as a kinyan chalipin. For a person to obligate himself something, not just by his word, but with a kinyan, that lends it more force and gives it more strength, and it's a greater commitment than just giving your word, is to also make a kinyan. The way this kinyan works, it's not a kinyan for something, but it's a kinyan for a commitment. It's a promise, a commitment of the chosen to marry the kala, and it's a commitment of the kala to get married to the chosen. So this commitment is strengthened by making a kinyan. And this kinyan is known as a kinyan sudar, which is the kinyan chalipin. Kinyan chalipin means that in order to get somebody to commit to something, he has to get something in return. That means he makes a commitment in exchange of receiving something. In this case, the chosen receives something from the kala, which is a sudar. A sudar means a handkerchief. It means a cloth, which is an important piece of cloth. And when he receives, the chosen receives that cloth from the kala, he in turn responds to that. The chalipin exchanges that for a commitment to marry her. And then the reverse is true. When the kala receives the sudar, an important piece of cloth from the chosen, receiving something allows for her to exchange, in exchange for receiving that, to go ahead and give a commitment to the chosen that she's going to get married to her. Kinyan is not only a kinyan, but it's a kinyan which is done in front of two witnesses. Two witnesses watch as the chosen kala both make their commitments through this kinyan. Now, there is halachic considerations that the witness who witnesses, one of the witnesses, is the one that gives the chosen as an agent of the kala that sudar we're talking about. That cloth that we're talking about, that the chosen gets from the kala and exchange commits to the kala, that is done via the witness. So the witness has an important sudar, an important piece of cloth, which is usually 3 etzbois by 3 etzbois, the size of 3 fingers by 3 fingers, the minimum size of the cloth. This should be also an important, and there's a lot of details. I'm talking about just the general easy way, the way to do it, to follow, as not to get into any questions over here. The best way to do it is, so we have the witness giving a cloth that he has to the chosen as an agent of the kala, and then the chosen takes and raises that cloth 3 tefachim. And when he raises that, that means he acquired that cloth, and then in return, he makes the commitment to get married to the kala. Now, sometimes the witnesses don't have a cloth, don't have something important. So therefore, and to prepare for that is the rabbi should have something important, and amongst Hasidim, usually the rabbi has a gartel, but not a thin, unimportant gartel that sometimes is used for davening in the Mincha Ma'ariv, but you know, like a Shachris gartel or a Shabbos gartel, which is a thicker, which is three etzbois, and it's an important piece of garment. It's an important garment, and the rabbi will give it as a gift for the duration of the ceremony of the kinyan to the one of the witnesses, so that he owns now. So now it's the witness's cloth, and the witness representing the kala will give the chosen a that sudar or that gartel. We call it the sudar. The chosen raises it. He commits himself to the kala. The two witnesses watch this, and then the chosen gives back the sudar. He gives it back to the rabbi, to the eidim. Sorry, he gives it back to the eid, and then the aid becomes now an agent of the chosen, and he gives it to the kala as an agent of the chosen. As the kala receives that sudar, then she obligates herself in exchange for receiving the sudar from the chosen. Then she obligates herself to marry the chosen, and this is all done in the presence of the witnesses watching this, which consummate and makes this into a powerful kinyan. So not only is there a kinyan, not only is there verbal agreement, but there is a kinyan, and it's a kinyan which is done with witnesses, which lends it lots of force and strength. And once that is done, now we have a very strong and powerful commitment between the two sides. And then the mothers of the chosen and the kala would take a plate, which is wrapped in a cloth, and break it as we do in the various ceremonies, that we break a plate at the height of our joy. This is a very joyous occasion, making a shidduch over here with a kinyan, and therefore one of the reasons is to break the plate, as we break the cup under the chuppah, and as we break the plate by the shtat noyim, we'll see later on, is to also remember a Yerushalayim on the day of the morning of Yerushalayim, on the day of our joy, Simla Alas Yerushalayim Al Rosh Simchasi, to keep on remembering Yerushalayim even at the height of our joy. So we break the plate. Once the plate is broken, the Mazel Tov is announced, sing Siman Tov of Mazel Tov, and at this point, now that we have a real shidduch, committed shidduch, the chosen will share a Torah thought with the assembled, and in Chabad the tradition is for the chosen to deliver a maimer, a Hasidic discourse. Basically, this ceremony of the lechayim or the vart makes up the, I guess, the focal point, if there is a kinyan there, which strengthens sort of this commitment of the engagement. Now, as mentioned earlier, in olden days, they would have a Shtar Tanoim written over there. That Shtar Tanoim would have a lot more details, but we leave those details and the writing of the Tanoim and the signing of it, everything to be done before the wedding itself. But this really belongs still in place together with the engagement. This is part of the Shiduchim, that's part of the engagement. So we'll discuss now a little bit the Shtar Tanoim and the document over there. And in this document, Shtar Tanoim, as mentioned earlier, are not only the commitment from the Chosen and Kala to marry each other, but rather it is also a monetary commitments of the both sides, what they're going to provide, who's going to pay for the wedding, all the services needed for the wedding. Now, of course, it's not as detailed as what really goes on into today, but there is some standard standard obligations that are mentioned over there, and we still go by that tradition. The Added thing to this document is that we also have Aroivim Kablonim participate and become party to this document. And Arev means a guarantor, and Arev Kablon is a strong guarantor. It's a guarantor who has even more obligation towards this monetary deal. Basically, there is a deal, monetary deals and commitments over here to provide for this wedding, and the Arev Kablon's job is to guarantee one Arev Kablon for the side of the Chosen, for their commitments, the Chosen side's commitment. The other, he guarantees that the Chosen side will fulfill their monetary obligations, and if not, he, the Arev Kablon, guarantees he will pick up the tab and he will see to satisfy their obligation. And then we have the Arev Kablon on the Kalah side, on the bride side of the family, that family, and that Arev Kablon undertakes that the in the event that the Kala's side, the bride's side, does not fulfill their monetary obligation to make this wedding happen, they undertake all the conditions that are written in the shtar that they will see to it. Now, of course, again, at this point, it's mostly a mute issue over here, because the Arevim Kablonim are already... at this point, they're already, the wedding is taking place, and hopefully these obligations have been fulfilled, but yet we still do it as it was done to give that shtar tnoim the full force that it is a commitment from the parties, and we have also the guarantors guaranteeing that these fulfillments will be these conditions and promises will be fulfilled, and that they undertake that. So each side brings an Arev Kablon to represent them, and they will also appear in this document of the Tanoim as the guarantors for this document. Now, earlier we mentioned about also in the Kinyan that we need witnesses. Now, witnesses, in order to be kosher, need to meet a certain criteria. Number one, they must be kosher for witnesses to testify and to be a qualified and a valid witness. First of all, they must be observant of all Torah and mitzvahs. They must be people who are religious and abide by the rules of the Torah and the mitzvahs. Number two, also very important, that the witnesses cannot be related. This goes for all witnesses, as mentioned, also by the Kinyan before, that these witnesses cannot be related either to each other, the two witnesses cannot be related, or they cannot be related to anyone who is a party to this. So in this case, they can't be related, not to the Chosen Kala or their families, or not to the Aravim Kablonim. Relatives, people that are related, and I'm not going to detail how close of a relative, who, you know, what level of a relative is disqualified, but just generally, relatives should not be used as witnesses to testify, because they aren't qualified. Relatives are not good witnesses to testify. So in this case, they cannot be witnesses on something. So when we have the two witnesses that are going to sign this document of Tanoim, and they're going to observe this Kinyan, and they're testifying for this, the rabbi needs to ascertain that these individuals actually are qualified to be and serve as the witnesses for these Kinyanim, before the Kinyan and for the Shtar of Tanoim. But the people that guarantee, that are part of the, that guarantee the deal, they're okay to be related to the chasen, the kala. On the contrary, you know, they're guaranteeing it because they know each other. We're only talking about the witnesses that are going to be signing and witnessing the kinyonim. They cannot be related. There's other halachas which are enumerated in the Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchos Eidus, to be qualified for Eidus, but the rabbis needs to make sure that these witnesses are kosher witnesses. So now, in detail, what happens in the in this Tanoim? First, that Tanoim talks about, in general, just to go through what the Tanoim talk about. First of all, and this is I'm talking about from the Chabad standard Tanoim. Of course, everybody's entitled to make any condition they want, and you know, when they get married, and that's would be their own Tanoim. But here we're talking about the ceremony, the way things are done, and this is done on the day of the chasana, and there's a standard tenoim that is used, and this is basically what it says in this tenoim. First of all, and it's important that the chasan, the kala, the parents of the chasan, the parents of the kala, and the guarantors and the witnesses should know what it's what they're signing for, what their obligation is, and what's going on. So people should be familiar with what it says in the Shtar Tanoim. So first, the agreement talks about the Shtar Tanoim, that there has been a general agreement that the Chosn Kala will get married based on Das Moshe V'Yisrael, meaning according to Halacha, the Torah that Moshe passed on to us, and the laws of Israel. As the chosen also says when he puts on the ring, he says, Kidas Meshe V'Yisrael. Then the Tanoim talks about the commitment of the chosen Kala to share, to be open, not to hide, to disclose and deal with their finances as equals and live together in love and harmony. Then, this is between the chosen and kala. Then it starts to talk about the obligations of the father of the chosen. In a very general way, it says that he will give gifts to both his son, the chosen, and also to the kala, and that the father of the chosen obligates himself to provide the clothing for his son, for the wedding, as befitting distinguished people. And then the same thing is done, and the same obligation is on the father of the kala, on the bride's side. So the parents of the kala are obligating, the father representing her parents, that they will give the dowry, as the gifts, it's called here a dowry, to both his daughter, the kala, and also to the chosn give gifts, and also that the father will provide the necessary clothing for his daughter as befitting distinguished people. Then the wedding, the Tanoim goes on to talk about that the wedding where it will take place, but not writing the exact place. It just says that there is agreement that the wedding, the time, and the place of the wedding will take place as the parties will agree to. That's the agreement that they will agree to where that should take place. There's also a blessing put in there that the hope is that the wedding should take place actually in Yerushalayim, because with the imminent Geula coming, we should make the celebration in Yerushalayim. Then it also talks about, specifically about the wedding expenses, and it says that the wedding expenses to be split between the families, and it mentions the payment for the rabbi, for the chazan, for the music, and the beddings, and the household needs, different things. It says the obligation is to split it in the middle. There's also a hint that is only hinted to in one word, that just there's sometimes unforeseen, unfortunate circumstances in which the parents invested a lot of money. What happens, God forbid, in unforeseen circumstances, how it's dealt with later on, there's just a hint for that. but it doesn't go into disclose that, and that's, you know, not brought up on a verbalized or expressed on paper or in speech during this time, and the basically this is the agreement that is on the document, and as I said, this is written right before, on the day of the Tanai, right before the wedding. And because today most of this are pre-printed forms, so it's only left for the rabbi to fill in the blanks and the proper information, the names of the father of the chosen, representing the chosen, the names of the father of the kala, representing the kala, the names of the two guarantors, the year, date, and place where the document is being signed. And then, when all this is filled out, the information is there, and everybody knows what's going on over here, so then you make the kinyan. Again, as mentioned before, this is a kinyan sudar, which is a kinyan chalipin. You do it with all the parties as we have done it earlier. So, as just briefly, you designate two people who are going to be the witnesses, and they are the ones that are basically testifying and consolidating, witnessing what's taking place. And as mentioned before, they must be qualified, meeting the qualifications of kosher witnesses, no relatives. And then, in this case, they have to see to it that everybody gets the kinyan. Everybody makes the kinyan. All those who are obligating themselves have to make the kinyan. And as mentioned before, the rabbi will give the sudar to one of the edis, or the edis has by himself a sudar, and then the rabbi, then the edis will give that sudar to, as representing of everybody else, to the chosen for his commitment to the marriage. He lifts it 3 tefachim, which is 9.48 inches, and he should hold the whole sudar, or if it's a gartel, whatever, is fully in his hand, not part in the witness's hand, but fully in his hand, raise it up. Again, if the witness has a sudar that qualifies, that's good. Otherwise, the rabbi gives him a good thick gartel for him to use. He raises, and the witness gives it to the chasun first, and he raises it for his commitment, and then in exchange for receiving the sudar, the chosen commits himself, and then the witnesses observe that, and then the after the chosen makes his kinyan, they go to the kala makes her kinyan, they give it to her, she raises it fully in her hand, she raises it to 9.48 inches, the 3 tefachim, and then you go to the parents. You do the same thing. First you go to the chosen's parents for his commitment in the tanaim. He raises it. Then you go to the kala's parents for his commitment on his part of the tanaim. He raises the sudar and he commits himself. Then you go to the first art of kablan, his commitment to be re-guaranteeing this transaction. Then you go to the second order of Kablan for his side that he's guaranteeing. And this is all done, witnessed in front of the witnesses. Now once all this is done in front of the witnesses, the rabbi can now fill in the final word which stays in the end, in the document. It says Vikanino. That means that there was a kinyan made. Now that the rabbi and the witnesses observed the kinyan, so we can fill it in. In some documents, they have already pre-printed. The word is, instead of vikanina, it says there already viranina. That means the kuf is a rage in there right now, which doesn't mean anything. But the rabbi doesn't have to write the whole word vikanina. He will just put the leg of the kuf inside of the reish and make the reish into a kuf. So now instead of viranina, it'll be vikanina. That is now. That cannot be done before, because that can only be done after the kinyan was made. Now that the witnesses observed that there was a kinyan made, they're going to sign on this document that they saw the kanina, that we were, and these are the witnesses are saying, we made sure that there was this kinyan over here, and that's what they're signing for. And that's why this is made now at this point. Sometimes there's a situation in where the kala isn't present at the time that they're making this kinyonim, because if it's not in the wedding hall, or even in the wedding hall, maybe she's not ready or available while this takes place. So then the kinyan can be made by her father on her behalf. So once the father will make the kinyan for his daughter's behalf, and the fact that she had previously expressed her agreement to the marriage and to the whole details of the tenoim, that is sufficient for the father to represent her, the father of the kala, and then he would actually also raise it a second time, that is for his obligation. He'll do it once for her and once for himself later on. And again, it should have, the person making the kinyan should hold the whole suder in their hand. It should be raised 3 tefachim, which is 9.48 inches. After this kinyan has been taking place from all the parties, then the witnesses sign their name in the bottom of the document. They sign their full Hebrew name, and they write Ben, their father's full Hebrew name. So it's so-and-so, Ben so-and-so, and in the end they add the word aid. And in some documents there is already pre-printed at the end of the line that's left for the witnesses to sign the word aid, so then they don't have to add the word aid over there. Once this document is filled, what they do with this document, you make 2 copies of this document. And at the Kabbalah Sponim, or the Tish, the Chosin's Tish, before the wedding, one person is honored to read out aloud the Tenoim. And after the reading of the Tenoim, then the mothers of the Chosin and the Kala again have a plate or a cup wrapped in a plate and wrapped in a cloth or something, in a bag, and they break it, as mentioned before, to remember Yerushalayim at the height of our joy. This is really the kinyan now. Then we give one of the copies to the Chosin's family, and the other copy of the Tenoim, of the document of Tenoim, to the other family. And at this occasion, the Chosin shares a Torah thought with the assembled, and in Chabad the custom is for the Chosin to recite the Maimer L'chadoidi Likras Kalot. This is the Shiduchim part with the Tenoim, and now we'll go over to the actual Kiddushin and Nisuin.